Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Today we're going to be talking to Rick Rozoff, StopNATO.com. By the way, I'm going to tell you right now, you want to go to rickrozoff.wordpress.com to get Rick's regular reports on Stop NATO. And at 5:30, we will be talking to Steve Gowans. He has a blog called What's Left? Very good question. And he is gowans.wordpress.com. Obviously, I hope it's obvious, we're going to talk about Syria and what the U.S. and its unstable policy is all about. I want to remind you that Tuesday, that'd be tomorrow, there's going to be a talk in Hamilton by Max Forte, the author of Sloughing Towards CERT, a very important book. Max Forte, that's Tuesday, June 18 in Hamilton, and that's going to be sponsored by Stop the War, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War .ca. We'll give you more details about that, but that's tomorrow night, Tuesday, and on Wednesday, Max Forte will be speaking at Beth Satoon at 612 Markham. That would be Wednesday. So he's in the area. He's a very important author. This is a great thesis, particularly given what is unfolding in Syria. But we're joined now, by Rick Rozoff. Are you there, Rick?
I am, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
It's always great to have you, and your Stop NATO site couldn't be more timely or more relevant. We have, over the weekend, a number of dramatic announcements, but one backdrop to it, which has been covered at Stop NATO, is the U.S.-led exercise in Jordan, where I think it's 19 countries were involved, and which I guess the headline from it is that they've decided to leave behind some fighter jets and some missiles. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, thanks for raising that, Phil. That's a military exercise with, as you mentioned, 19 countries, about which we can say something, incidentally, called Eager Lion, and in Jordan. 8,000 troops altogether, the preponderance of them being U.S. Troops, of course, including potential assault troops, special forces, and infantry troops that could be part of any prospective military action against neighboring Syria. And the U.S. has brought in, fairly large a contingent not only of troops but of military equipment, including F-16s. Those are the fighter jets you referred to as the Patriot Advanced Capability 3 interceptor missiles of the sort that the U.S., Netherlands, and Germany have deployed to Turkey, the Turkish border with Syria last year, and also a lot of non-fixed wing, aircrafts, the Harrier, Coburn, Osprey. Assault helicopters. And the report's official, and this is right from Chuck Hagel, Secretary of Defense, head of the Pentagon, is that the U.S. is going to leave some, if not all, of the F-16s and the Patriot missiles in Jordan after the exercise is completed. It started on June 12th, incidentally. Mm-hmm. So, what 19 nations are involved, that's something without becoming too detailed or circumstantial, I think it's probably worth speculating about. They're NATO countries, of course, and NATO partner countries. Mm-hmm. Jordan itself is a founding member of the NATO Military Partnership Mediterranean Dialogue, which includes, at the moment, seven countries in North Africa, the Middle East, Arabic-speaking countries, with Libya to be the eighth member of it. And Jordanian troops have participated in military exercises in the Balkans and the Caucasus and elsewhere, as part of general NATO and, NATO partnership activities in the past. So this is, part of a broader military buildup. We have to recall that the northern part of Iraq is also, de facto, if not officially, a U.S.-Turkish military zone that can be used for attacks on Syria as well as those in Jordan and Turkey and Israel.
It's interesting how, as you describe it, ideas about sovereignty and the existence of states are becoming almost mythical in that region. The way you describe the movement of power and the suborning of extra personnel is hard. Meanwhile, everybody's looking at countries called Iraq or called Turkey or called Syria, which NATO seems to kind of treat kind of like it's clay.
Yeah, that's a key point you raise, and many of your listeners may be familiar with the map, the broader, the greater, the new Middle East that was designed by former Pentagon official, former U.S. military official Ralph Peters, some 12 or so years ago, which was discovered, I guess it wasn't supposed to be, made public, but it was discovered at a NATO war college in Rome several years ago that lays out a prospective new Middle East with, the boundaries, with the borders withdrawn fairly extensively. And there's no question but that, plans of that sort are afoot. And we have to recall, in 2 years it'll be the 100th anniversary of the so-called Sykes-Picot, arrangement between France and Britain, with the tacit, complicity of Tsarist Russia at that point to, divide up the territories of the sick man of Europe, the Ottoman Empire, Turkey.
Yes. And not looking too healthy at the moment, by the way.
Yeah, well,
they seem to
exactly.
have strange symptoms.
Yeah, I mean, the parallels, again, are astonishing. And just a brief, chronicle of what happened was, in 1911, it was kicked off with the Italo-Turkish War around Libya, where Italy gained control of Libya from the Ottoman Empire. That's exactly 100 years before the war of 2 years ago against Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And, then the two Balkans wars of 1912 and 1913, the three of those serving as a prelude for, World War I, the world's first world conflict, the global conflict. And the understanding was that the territories of the Ottoman Empire would be carved up by the Entente powers, France, Britain, and Russia. Russia, of course, was knocked out of the running with the Bolshevik Revolution and the earlier February Revolution of 1917. But, France and Britain went about, dividing amongst themselves, amongst the two of them, what they want in the Middle East. What we're seeing, and you've heard any number of commentators make, you've probably said it yourself, Phil, is what we're seeing is a new attempt to divide up, the MENA, the Middle East, North Africa region, which, happens to be the former Ottoman territory almost entirely. And that, we can't help but seeing, the past 12 years, since 2001, but, surely since the beginning of the so-called Arab Spring of 2.25 years ago, an attempt to redefine and redraw the borders of the Middle East, and that's what's going on.
Yeah. I noticed Noam Chomsky gave an interview. He's apparently in Beirut, or was about 3 or 4 days ago, and he said that was the first item on the agenda for the questioner was Sykes-Picot, and he said Sykes-Picot is disappearing. Or being revamped or something.
Part of the Ralph Peters map, or what do we imagine to be envisioned by, the Western empire builders, have got a second lease, a new lease in life after the end of the Cold War in the late 1980s and the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, is to, redefine it closer to the heart's desire, to quote a poet from the area. Omar Khayyam, of course, and apparently the division of Lebanon and Syria may want to relook at that. Clearly Iraq is going by the roadside. As you say, there may be an entity on the map right now that's referred to as Iraq, but we understand there are at least two political entities now, with the northern autonomous region, Kurdish dominated, being something that was carved out of Iraq by the United States in 1991 and will never return. Is an integral part of Iraq.
Yeah, I've read such thing, commentary that, for example, Israel has very special relationship with the so-called Iraqi Kurdistan.
Well, the plan
which is hardly
is
remarked on.
Is to resume an oil pipeline that existed about 100 years ago that would run from the northern Kurdish area around Kirkuk into Israel. So, that's, Turkey too, oddly enough. I mean, as they're waging a war of veritable extermination against their own Kurdish minority, they have the closest relationships with the Barzani-Talabani clique, in Kirkuk and in northern Iraq, which is being used, as a site for, amongst other things, military attacks against Syria.
Yeah. This is, by the way, we're talking to Rick Razov. To go to the Stop NATO, you should go to rickrazov.wordpress.com. Incidentally, there's A feature of the site includes essays, poems, and selections from novels and literature on the issue of combating war, and really makes it a very attractive addition to that site. And again, this is Rick Rozoff, StopNATO.com. And Rick, one of your items recently mentioned that they're moving, there's a move of NATO, if I understood it right, some part of their headquarters from Spain to Turkey. Is that right?
Yeah, that's Allied Land Command. It's being sold as part of what's called smart defense. That is a belated recognition, I suppose, by the NATOites that the economic crisis generated by and in the United States 5 years ago has taken a certain toll on the economy, certainly on the, you know, living standards of Europeans. And as a result, they're cutting back, or at least combining, maybe rationalizing would be a good word. So two military commands, one of which had been in Spain, are being consolidated, close down, and then move closer to the heart's desire, to the scene of action, which is Turkey. This is, of course, the same area where the Patriot missiles have been moved in, same area where the U.S. is moving special interceptor missile radar that's been moved into Turkey as of about 16 months ago. So we're seeing, you know, what people in the State Department and the Pentagon for years have been at least obliquely or amongst themselves referring to the push to the east and the south, and that's where NATO's moving. I mean, they're moving to the south, the eastern Mediterranean, into the Middle East, into the South Caucasus. Mm-hmm. And, this Turkey then being the southernmost and easternmost NATO member is logically the place where you're going to relocate interceptor missiles, missile radar, an Allied land command, and, other additions that have been added on just within the last year and a half.
This is really, by the way, a rather crucial intersection. If you look at the bones out there, there's Alexander the Great, and, of course, there used to be Constantinople. And now Istanbul, and the main players are all getting back, and they're bringing hardware, which is something you ought to worry everyone. You have a great thesis question is raised at your site. I forget who was writing or speaking on the subject. Might have been you, actually. This is Rick Rozoff we're talking to. And the headline of the piece is NATO is antithetical to the United Nations. All this putting together of an alliance, which you characterize correctly, is offensive, really ought to be offensive to the United Nations. And the question is, why isn't it raised? How is this being allowed to go on while we have a UN?
No, you're correct. The quote is mine, and it's from an interview I'd done with Voice of Russia with John Robles. But I can't think of any better example. I think it's posted somewhere on the Stop NATO site. Otherwise, I can get it for anyone who wants to see it. But roughly 3 years ago, there was a lengthy article in a Swiss journal, as I recollect, by Hans von Sponeck, the former UN official who was humanitarian coordinator for Iraq for the United Nations and was an assistant secretary general, I believe is the title, for the United Nations. And he wrote, masterful work on the subject of NATO being both a challenge to and a threat to the United Nations, and being, and I may even have picked up the adjective, to be honest with you, antithetical from him, and that the West was crafting a new NATO to under the guise of cooperating with, in fact, supplanting and ultimately replacing the United Nations as the main arbiter of conflicts internationally.
It certainly negates the UN, right? I mean, the UN actually ends up sort of falling along in the dust after NATO creates problems.
Exactly, and as we've seen in the first wars by the North Atlantic Treaty Organization in the post-Cold War period, of course, in the Balkans and then in South Asia and North Africa, the United Nations plays a role of faithful foot servant that comes in and cleans up the damage.
Yeah. Now that
it's been reduced to that sort of role.
Yeah, and that raises a name which you remark on also at the site. Go to rickrozoff.wordpress.com, by the way, to see the all the articles. But Bill Clinton is advising Obama, and it ain't funny to read. It's pretty shocking.
You were able to hunt that down then, right?
I did. Oh, yeah, thank you very much. I rely on you. It took me right there. Yes, Bill Clinton, people have to remember, he's very proud of what he did in the Balkans.
Yes, he is. I mean, first of all, it pulled his own fat out of the fire, didn't it? I mean, it was a very uncomfortable moment for him.
And a lot of fat it is.
Yeah. Yes, not to be any more risque, we'll leave it at that. But, it disengaged him or got him out of, not only a sex scandal, which began, we should remember, in December of 1998, when the U.S. Congress was voting on impeachment, is when he and his colleague, his partner in crime, Tony Blair, launched a blistering series of cruise missile attacks inside Iraq, resulting in the deaths easily of hundreds of innocent civilians. For no other reason than to distract attention from the impeachment hearing with Bill Clinton vis-a-vis the
Commander-in-Chief.
Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah,
the Commander-in-Chief, indeed. It's not a matter of speculation. These people will wage war to extricate themselves from a thorny political situation. That's not the entirety of it, of course. The war against Yugoslavia, beginning in March of 1999, was designed to coincide with the 50th anniversary summit of NATO in Washington, D.C., the first time it was ever held in an American city in the United States, in North America. And, they needed a big show, a spectacle, to prove the indispensability of the world's only military alliance. And the war against Yugoslavia, which I assume, Mr. Clinton and company thought would be over in short order, and in fact lasted for 78 or 79 days, was meant to be the entertainment.
And by the way, you underline a nice point there, because Americans thinking themselves as a country and not as part of joined up with others, I assume had to be the idea would be to show them that we are the leaders of this, so it's not a problem for Americans who suffer from true patriotism, which would question whether or not they ought to be involved in foreign alliances. Mm-hmm. This idea was to say these people are all subservient, right? We bring them here to America and lay out the plan.
Yeah, right you are. And there is an image indelibly engraved in my imagination, perhaps your own, of during that summit in Washington, which actually marked three things. It was the half-century anniversary of NATO, 8 years after the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. It marked the first incorporation of former Warsaw Pact nations into NATO as full members, Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic at that time. And as we've just discussed, it was occurring against the backdrop of NATO's first full-fledged war against a country, the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, that had not threatened any NATO member or any other nation state. Mm-hmm. So we had all this going on simultaneously, but you might remember the photographs of Bill Clinton and Tony Blair surrounded by, for all the world, like one of the later Roman emperors, with the pennants and the flags of all the conquered provinces of the empire at that time, gathered around them to demonstrate, as you indicate, the global span and ambit of the world's only imperial power at that time and now. Mm-hmm. So, yes, indeed, what we saw was fawning, what were the terms used by Zbigniew Brzezinski's allies, vassals and tributaries? what we now see is not only 27 full partners, allies rather, former fellow NATO members of the United States in NATO, but we see somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 countries around the world who are now the vassals and tributaries, and it's just through NATO.
Yes, and by the way,
through various NATO partnership programs.
Yeah. Again, this is Rick Rossoff, and he points out at Stop NATO that there's other countries that are sort of being quietly gobbled up and chewed on. I think you quoted an Austrian newspaper pointing out that Finland and Moldova have both been co-opted recently, are slowly absorbed.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Austria itself, incidentally. But, Finland and Sweden and Finland, which will be doublet. I mean, they're to come in simultaneously, as are the three South Caucasus, countries of Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia.
What an appetite.
Oh, yes, but there are two new categories, by the way, that NATO has designed just since the NATO summit, or about the time of the last NATO summit in Chicago here a year ago in May. One is aspirant countries, and those are currently Georgia, Bosnia, Montenegro, and Macedonia, as though, the people of the countries truly aspire to NATO membership.
First, you have to run the obstacle course and do the push-ups.
Well, you know, the most dangerous of the four aspiring countries, Georgia, just lost seven troops killed, I think 19 wounded, one incident in Afghanistan. You know, the worst so far for them in that war, and, you know, probably worse for Georgian in terms of Georgian casualties and even the Soviet experience in Afghanistan in the 1980s. But you're correct about Moldova, which is another former Soviet republic that is engaged in an active, so-called frozen conflict, armed conflict, with Transdniester and the other side of the Dniester River, meaning that, NATO could enter the fray on behalf of the government in Chisinau in Moldova against not only Transdniester, but against Russia, which has peacekeeping troops, stationed in Transdniester.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a character in War and Peace.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I seem to remember crossing that river. You just mentioned a river that kind of rings a bell.
You're thinking of the Dnieper, perhaps, but it's close enough. but the other partnership program that we've talked about before is one that, the very name of which, should sound an alarm. Partners across the globe. That's what NATO designates it as being.
How nice.
And that includes, to date, eight countries in the broader Asia-Pacific region. They are, very interesting, Iraq, Pakistan, Mongolia, Afghanistan, Australia, New Zealand, South Korea, Japan. So these are countries bordering Iran, bordering Russia, bordering Syria, bordering or near China, being brought into a new NATO partnership program. And I'm sure several of your listeners have seen the article that surfaced a couple of weeks ago where the United States has supposedly offered NATO membership, not partnership, NATO membership to Colombia and South America.
That's a very important one, which, by the way, took a lot of people by surprise. We were talking about it here. Many had not heard of this. I read it at Stop NATO. By the way, go to rickrozoff.wordpress.com to get to all the details. Please go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but Colombia would mark the expansion of the so-called partners across the globe outside of the broader Asia-Pacific region to truly become international. And with the inclusion of Colombia as any kind of partnership, any kind of partner, rather, with NATO, this would mean, would signal the expansion of NATO through members, full membership and through partnerships to every inhabited continent in the world. Because Australia, as I just mentioned, is a partner, and they're of course two countries, yours and mine, in North America, Europe, North Africa through the Mediterranean Dialogue, several partnership programs taking in countries in Asia, so that the only country that the only continent rather outside of Antarctica that's been spared to date is South America, and Colombia becoming a formal NATO member would then indicate that NATO sunk its military tent or its military stakes in every inhabited continent in the world,
and address America's alienation problem of South America, where people say, "Oh, they can't project power there anymore." But I've never believed that. But at any rate, that obviously would help solve that problem of projecting power.
Right. Plus, Colombia would become a NATO partner, be supported by NATO for the exact and perhaps exclusive purpose of combating the ALBA nations, the Bolivarian Alliance of the Peoples of our Americas, most notably, of course, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Bolivia.
Mm-hmm. Speaking to Rick Rozoff, and Rick, one issue that has come up, which is might be what we call a burning issue, is the issue of balance, which is the discussion of the introduction of S-300s, as if I knew what I was talking about, missiles, from Russia to Syria. That's it been in the backdrop. Has that taken place? Do we know?
No. Unfortunately, no.
Mm-hmm.
What you're talking about is, at least in terms of Russian military hardware, the kind of cutting-edge mobile surface-to-air missile. And I don't understand a whole lot more about it than you do, I'm sure, Phil, if that. Mm-hmm. But what I do understand, it's apparently particularly effective against cruise missiles as well as air-to-surface missiles. So it could, according to one retired Russian official, Syria would actually need somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 batteries of S-300s to protect its complete territory against what would be a probable And let's stress the urgency of this. It should surprise nobody if you wake up tomorrow and hear that U.S. and British, or U.S., British, and French warships in the Eastern Mediterranean have launched a blistering barrage of Tomahawk and other cruise missile attacks inside Syria, as they did,
yes.
The U.S. and Britain, that is, in March of 2011 against Libya. That's perfectly within the realm of possibilities.
Yes.
The Russian missiles have not arrived, even though there's a contract for them. Same thing, by the way, with the same missiles in Iran, where both countries, Syria and Iran, have negotiated with Russia, in many cases paid the money, and then not received the missiles, which are desperately needed.
Mm-hmm. That, by the way, I mean, yes. the line, this expression, red line, which is absurd in the case of the chemical weapons, of which there doesn't appear to be, even on the superficial phony evidence, wouldn't constitute any actual military issue. But the real red line is this magic expression, balance of power, which is an imbalance. Israel has weapons superiority in every grade, right?
That's correct. Not only over Syria, but over every other, all other Middle Eastern countries combined. And as strategic weapons, has hundreds of nuclear weapons with advanced delivery systems, some of which, by the way, are being provided by Germany, which has supplied them with several, basically given them for nothing, several Dolphin submarines that are equipped to carry nuclear-capable missiles.
Yeah.
That can prowl the seas in the Eastern Mediterranean through the Red Sea into the Persian Gulf if need be. And everyone knows that. So there's no question but that, even though Syria has, in terms of Arab nations, a comparatively formidable military, it's nothing, as you're indicating, compared to Israel. Certainly not to Israel and its NATO backers.
Mm-hmm. Just the last question, just to underline, this is urgent. You quote a General Breedlove, which makes me think of Dr. Strangelove. But
good comparison.
Isn't that odd, these people with their names? The head of NATO's named Fogg? Anyway.
Yeah.
But Breedlove says that, don't have any question about it, a no-fly zone is an act of war.
Yeah, that's one of those rare bits of honesty or candor that, for whatever reason, certainly not, humanitarian, that are issued by, and this, you're talking about General Philip Breedlove, who's the new military commander. Incidentally, both of NATO, he's Supreme Allied Commander of Europe for NATO, but also the head of U.S. European Command. Mm-hmm. Which includes not only all of Europe, but one country and one country only outside of Europe, that's Israel, in its area of responsibility. So he's somebody who is dual-hatted, as they say in the military. He's in charge of both commands, and packs a pretty big wallop in that through what's called the NATO burden-sharing or nuclear-sharing program. Four countries, including Turkey, to get back to where we started, are hosting U.S. tactical nuclear weapons that could be used in the event of a larger conflagration in the Middle East region, which is something we should have stressed earlier, which is I don't see any scenario in which a combined NATO-Israeli-Persian Gulf sheikdom attack against Syria does not, one way or another, inevitably pull Iran and Russia into the conflict. Iran, perhaps intentionally, Russia unintentionally, in which case you have a much larger conflict than what we've seen with those that have been, where the West has been able to localize them, over the last 20 years, such as in Iraq or Libya, Yugoslavia, Afghanistan.
Yeah. Well, Rick, that's a great summary of really, as you say, an urgent matter, and I'm sure glad we were talking to you. It's rickrozoff.wordpress.com. Go to that site. Rick, thank you very, very much. Look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on.
Okay, bye-bye. And I remind you, Tuesday in Hamilton, there's going to be a talk by Max Forte, who's the author of Sloughing Towards CERT, and that's going to be room HS1AH. That's I assume, McMaster, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.ca. Go to that site. And, of course, Wednesday, June 19 at 7 p.m. At Betsatoon, 612 Markham. Max Forte will be speaking there. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk to Stephen Gowans.